Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. About once a month, we get to check in with the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser, and he joins us this morning. Billy, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Newell.
Billy, I know that you just came back from overseas on a number of initiatives in order to improve tourism. Give us a little state of the state of what happened.
Yeah, this was our third mission to of the federal money. We got $300,000 a year for the next 3 years to go to three new international markets, Italy, Spain, and India. And this was our third initial trip to India. India has the number two international travels to America. It's a huge population, great new market for us. The wealth there is growing, so more people are traveling. And we had a great trip with all the travel agents and travel writers. And, you know, we brought a great team from Louisiana. We partnered with New Orleans and Company and Baton Rouge. We had a great team, the coastal communities along the coast. We represented all of Louisiana. And really feel like the spicy food of Louisiana fits well with the spicy food there. As a matter of fact, you know, we always bring Louisiana hot sauces, Tabasco and Crystal. Well, they love Eagle hot sauce out of New Orleans. I had never heard of it, so I had to come back and get me a bottle of Eagle hot sauce. but that's a very popular hot sauce in India and Dubai, Eagle hot sauce. Go figure.
Yeah, it's funny how you come across these little tidbits about where you live and you've never heard of it, because that's happened to me just recently on a trip that I went out of town on. You know, it's kind of, you got to love those moments though, right?
Yep.
So, Billy, you come back. I know the governor's been beating the bushes around the state of Louisiana, advocating on behalf of his tax plan. I believe, if my memory serves me correct, you have some dedicated dollars to your office for your funding. Is that correct?
Yeah, we actually met with some of the governor's team the day before yesterday, and got a whole booklet on everything he's proposing. I haven't gone through it all. The one concern we brought up right off the bat was the 0.03 cents of sales tax dedicated fund to tourism that we get to promote tourism all over the world. And we talked about how important that dedicated fund was, simply because we have to plan several years out. You know, the Congre in Canada, which is a big thing we do every 5 years, which is our biggest international market. If we've got to go back to the legislature every year to fight for tourism money, that could be a problem. You know, Colorado got rid of the tourism dollars 1 year because they had a tight budget and tourists don't vote, so it was an easy thing to wipe out. They still have not recovered from losing their tourism money that 1 year. And, you know, I like to remind everyone, prior to COVID, tourism was the number four industry in Louisiana, employing over 250,000 people, brought in $1.9 billion that year. That's over $1,100 for Louisiana family. We're going to be close to breaking a record this year with the Super Bowl, and it's an economic engine for Louisiana. It reaches every community. So we surely want to keep our name in front of everybody around the world and keep, you know, and we get competition from every state.
So obviously it's a very complex issue. I had the governor on the other day. There's a lot of stuff that still hadn't, the details hadn't been revealed. You probably know more than what's been revealed to the media. Were they receptive to your concerns?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one thing I will tell you, you know, I applaud the governor for, I think eventually we've got to get rid of income tax to be competitive. You got to look at what your neighbors are doing and be competitive. A lot of the wealthy people, when they're selling their company, they move to Florida, Texas, because they don't have to pay income tax. So I applaud the efforts to restructure the tax thing. It's way overdue. We just want to make sure we analyze what we're changing to make sure the long-term effects. And of course, one of them is the film tax credit. You know, we were the first state to do it. Since then, 34 states have done it. We got rid of it 1 year because it was unlimited and it was truly out of control, the amount we were spending on it. And the legislature came back. We did a study. The tourism office did a study to show the impact of the film industry. And it had over $1 billion economic impact. That study showed that 9% of everyone that comes to Louisiana is heavily influenced by a TV show or movie. So the next year, the legislature put it in with a cap. And, you know, Georgia, that year we were out of it, Georgia took all that business. Now, they don't have a cap. And I spoke to that lieutenant governor. It's going to break that state if they don't put a cap. So they may end it because it's out of control in Georgia. But I think a reasonable amount funded each year to keep those films coming here, it's absolutely has some value because 34 other states wouldn't have done it if it didn't. And it started here in Louisiana.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, it's a little bit of a carrot, right? And there's a bunch of different nuances. And to completely abandon it, I guess we've quantified what the revenue means. I know that we have. How do we replace that? How do we anticipate replacing that? I mean, I think that's the issue that a lot of folks are trying to figure out, whether or not these measures are revenue neutral, right?
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, Newell, I've been talking about this for years. My father and Treen had proposed this quail tax, and it stood for something. I can't remember what the letter stood for. But it was 50 cents a barrel oil and 0.003 cents processed fuels. And back then, I think it would have brought in 40 to 60 billion. If you included LNG, it probably would be over 100 billion today. And you know, Steve Scalise keeps saying, I'm going to get more offshore revenue for Louisiana because they're using our roads. We breathe in the air. The federal government ain't never given us more offshore revenue. So wouldn't it be fair to take a user fee for that? And it would fix all our problems. We could pay our teachers, our police, $100,000 a year, fund all of the need projects around the state, get rid of income tax. And you know, I just got back from Dubai. They spent so much money building these islands, creating that city as a tourist attraction with all the money they got. And now tourism is off the charts there because of what they've created. But this thing, you know, you look at it, you know, the lobbyists are going to fight it. But if you look at John Bell gave local government the authority to take that 10-year exemption away. I believe Plaquemines Parish took it away. That ConocoPhillips refinery shut down. I don't know if that's the only reason. But we could actually give them the land free forever and subsidize local government for the loss in taxes if they give us this user fee. And back when Treen proposed it, they hadn't figured it out yet, but we couldn't exempt Louisiana residents, but we could give a rebate check to every Louisiana residents for the increase, because I think 90% of that leaves the state. But every Louisiana resident could get a check every year like they do in Alaska. That ought to help people move back to Louisiana if they're getting a rebate check.
Absolutely. I mean, it would seem to me that all of these options would be on the table. It'll be interesting to see where this lands, right? As more and more details are provided, I think a lot of folks are very nervous, again, whether or not they're going to be revenue neutral. I think everyone would love to minimize and eliminate, ultimately eliminate, state income tax, because I, like others, believe that you want to have that competitive advantage, or at least a level of playing field with those that have already accomplished same. But it's the devils are in the details always as to how this is going to play out. Folks are still kind of evaluating. I talked to a number of school board members in multiple parishes who still hadn't figured out whether or not it's a win-win for them or a break-even or what other or otherwise. So it will be interesting to see where this goes. You guys had your Keep Louisiana Beautiful State Conference. I know there were a bunch of Everyday Hero Award recipients for 2024. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we actually, next week, we're having our conference in. We did give out a bunch of awards around the state because people can't make the conference. But we want to highlight those elected officials, those individuals, those groups that are going beyond the call of duty as we work towards a clean Louisiana. We will be kicking off some litter summits in each region of the state to work with them on making sure our grant programs are fitting their needs. DOTD has been working with us on a plan to get local governments the money for cleaning up, cutting the grass on state highways. They are looking at a pilot program for a company to do the interstates where we can monitor and make sure they're doing their work. Wildlife Fishery has worked with us on a new hotline where you can call in and report people at litter and they'll get a ticket in the mail. And, only about 20% or less than 20% of people actually litter. And the one way to stop littering is if you ever pick up litter for a day or you get a ticket for littering, you're a lot less likely to litter a second time. And that's one way we can start cutting down on litter. We're working with DEQ on these tire dumps and doing more enforcement. And I applaud all of the departments in the governor's team that have really stepped up. And the governor kept that task force alive that was put in place by the last governor. And we'll be meeting with the task force to start making sure we're doing all we can to keep our foot on the gas till we have a clean Louisiana.
Do you feel momentum building, Billy?
Absolutely. You know, when I asked the legislature to move Keep Louisiana Beautiful into my office 2 years ago, that year we had 48 groups that cleaned up Louisiana during Love the Boot Week. This last year we had, I think, over 800 groups. And wow. In every parish, for the second time, 2 years in a row, every parish had groups. We had over 100 schools, 14 universities, faith-based groups, individuals. And a lot of those groups don't just do it during Love the Boot Week. They're out there every, like in Tiger Town, they're out there every Saturday with a group. So, you know, as dirty as the highways are, the more people litter. If you see a clean highway, you're less likely to litter. So it takes a lot of effort to keep cleaning up, but I do see an impact. I do see the state cleaner. We've got a lot of work to do in some of these areas that don't have trash service to the rural areas and getting dump sites established so people aren't dumping it on the side of the road. Our sheriffs have done an incredible job. We actually bought 8 vans with a grant so the sheriffs can take work release prisoners out there to clean up the roads, and they have really stepped up to the plate in every parish. So we're seeing that momentum that we got to keep it going. The employees that we used to give money to the nonprofit Keep Louisiana Beautiful, those passionate ladies are now state employees working directly under my office. We have a nonprofit that raises money for grants. That we have a lot of great partners like Coca-Cola that have contributed a lot of money. They're doing some great things with recycling. So we get in a lot of good corporate partners. I'm talking to Walgreens and Home Depot about putting garbage cans back in the parking lot and emptying them. Cracker Barrel is the only corporate that puts garbage cans all over their parking lot and empties them every day and keeps their parking lot clean. We need every strip mall and every business to put parking garbage cans back in the parking lot and empty them, because you will throw it in a garbage can if it's convenient rather than on the street. And so those are all things we're working on. And we're also speaking in all the schools, leaders against litter. I ask every elected official, I go speak in the schools and tell kids to tell your parents don't litter. You can be a good influence and really change that. And Representative Ill, who coaches Little League, makes his boys clean up the parking lot before practice and after practice. And it teaches kids the respect for littering, and that's something we can do in helping change the culture.
I love that practice. Remind me, are you promoting a book festival right now as well?
Yeah, we have actually that book fest over the last several years. So it has grown to one of the best book fests. I think we were named in the top five in the country. And it's all Louisiana writers. They get a chance to sign autographs, promote it. And actually, we're highlighting Steve Gleason's book. He'll be there this year. It's November 2nd in Baton Rouge. I'll be kicking it off at 9 a.m. in the morning. And then there's things for the kids. There's children's books. But it's a great chance to meet the authors, all the great authors from Louisiana that write books, and you can meet with them. They sign autograph copies for you. And it's become more and more of a special event. We have a stage with entertainment. So it's right there at the state capitol. And it's really a fun day to get out and support some of our local writers in Louisiana.
Final thoughts?
I'm encouraged by the efforts by the legislature and the governor to rework this tax structure. And in my meetings, I was very encouraged about their concerns for looking at everything and making sure we do little harm to any of these special groups that have brought people to Louisiana, and look forward to working with the legislators to do the right thing. And I feel good about what we're going to be able to do here in Louisiana this year. And surely with the Super Bowl coming, we're going to have a great year in tourism.
Absolutely. And as always, we thank you. We know you're very busy. We appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend. You going to the Saints game this evening?
No, I'm not. I'm working this evening, so I'll be at home watching it after I have some meetings this evening.
Saints. Absolutely. The Lieutenant Governor of the State of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Stay with us. Housing NOLA's annual report card on the state of affordable housing is out again. And for the seventh year in a row, New Orleans has earned a failing grade. And here to talk to us about it is Andranika Morris from Housing NOLA. Andranika, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. Thanks for having me.
So you and I have talked about this a lot. This is a 10-year plan. We seem to have missed the mark every year. Tell us about it.
So, yeah, so when we started the Housing NOLA process almost 10 years ago now, it was with the idea in mind that we would get the policymakers and those responsible to make commitments to what they would invest in, how they would manage those resources, what policies they would implement. And yes, for the last several years, the mark has been missed, unfortunately. And things have actually gotten worse because of those missed investment opportunities, those chances to take some forward action from a policy perspective. Things have actually gotten worse in the last few years, and that has led us to the point where now we have, like the rest of Louisiana, we're dealing with this insurance crisis, and there's a real need to be more proactive for the city to lead in a way that they haven't. And there's been some in recent months, there has been some indication that there is now a willingness to do that. But we need the community is going to have to lean in as well and demand more of their leaders.
So Andranika, that's the what, that's the outcome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why this outcome? I mean, we keep hearing, you know, the city this, the city that, but when we dig deep into the details of this, everybody understands the challenge, everybody understands the importance. Why do we find ourselves in this predicament?
Well, but despite the fact that everyone agrees that this is important, that isn't showing up when it comes down to it, when it's the chance to commit to a set of actions that will absolutely guarantee that folks who need housing get to keep it, get to have access to it, get the chance to work for it, right? All of the things that we say that we want, that we pivot. And not all of us, right? But the people with power pivot. That's why, and they get aided and abetted sometimes by policymakers, by community leaders, by thought makers and opinion makers. And it's unfortunate that when push comes to shove, we're saying, well, let's just let the market decide. And even the market is saying now, no, we need some help. We need some support, and there needs to be some real political will behind this. So that's one of the reasons
For me, though, has it really been about a function of money? I mean, we give money to culture bearer groups and this and that every year, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. And it always seems to me to be one, execution, and two, priority. And looking at the budget and what we can afford in a holistic way, and understanding that we cannot be all things to all people. You know, chameleons are never really effective, you know, and
right. We
have to pick and choose. And those are politically hard decisions. You've talked about this a lot, but we don't want to make these politically hard decisions, you know. And
That's right.
You know, and I know that Councilwoman Leslie Harris has proposed a 2% of the budget to be set aside in a housing trust fund. That sounds great at first blush, but it still requires execution and making politically hard decisions. Because, you know, talk about it generating roughly $20 million, sounds great, love it. That doesn't go very far. Not when we are 55,000 units short in this city.
That's right. That's right. And that's exactly
you begin to do the math. I mean, if we were to go out and build 200 units at $100,000 a piece, which is cheap, you don't get much for that number. That's $20 million. I mean, that's a drop in the bucket next to the $55,000.
But but it's exactly what you're talking about. Is this is what we do sometimes because we don't take the steps because it seems like, well, this is not enough, so we're not going to do anything. And that is part of the problem because $20 million, $17 to $20 million every year does add up eventually, especially if there are processes in place to ensure that the money gets out the door instead of hand-wringing, instead of trying to figure out who should get it and what political favored projects should get it. Instead, it's based on need, and that those conversations have to be had transparently. And that's one of the things that's really great about the Housing Trust Fund, beyond the fact that it's not a new tax, it's using existing revenues to add to the investments that we are already making with our federal funds. We're also talking about a process where those hard decisions are made with communities' input and in full view of community, instead of hiding behind, well, we're not sure. We don't know what the mayor's doing. We're not sure what this agency is doing. What has been proposed here, what's on the ballot, is a process that accounts for all of the money, instead of doing what we've been doing for the last few years.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a moment. So one of the priorities is... Yes, we must, because one of the priorities here is creating affordable rental housing, including filling financial gaps and incentivizing landlords. I love it. I understand how that works. But in this city, we have landlords in New Orleans East that have been really abusing tenants for decades. And as a city and as a code enforcement agency in this city, we have been able to do little or nothing about it.
Well, and, but that's changed. That's in the last few months. That's why it's been a really interesting time. The last few months, we've seen a decided turn. In the last few months, while we have been failing for the last several years, in the last few months, there have been things taken, there have been measures that have been implemented that can turn this around. So when you talk about those predatory landlords, one of the worst landlords in the city's history just got out of jail. Josh Bruno was jailed, not for his bad landlording, but for a property rights issue actually with his neighbors that's really reflective of how he managed the properties that he had. That's another thing. But what we've done recently is two things have happened. The Healthy Homes Initiative has moved forward with addressing those large-scale developers, not just in New Orleans East. Josh Bruno's properties, for example, were in Mid-City, Uptown, and he was one of the parts of Central City. He was one of the worst landlords this city has ever seen. He's lost a lot of his properties. And they now have policies in place. The city, not just using code enforcement, but the Healthy Homes Ordinance can now step in and shut those properties down and make sure that those folks are not just being abused. Also,
yeah, but where does it go from there, Andranika? Because and I have talked about adjudicated properties for a long time.
Yep.
I mean, you know, going back to the Landrieu administration, he had this grandiose plan of dividing up the city into geographic regions and going in, getting the properties adjudicated to the city, putting them back into the stream of commerce in order to address this affordable housing crisis that we find ourselves in. And we still have over 20,000 blighted pieces of property that we've done little or nothing in adjudicated property. And
well, we also have thousands of empty apartments and homes that are occupiable that can be rented, but those but those folks can't price them correctly because of the insurance crisis. We see landlords raising their rent, so that's why we're talking about doing you said the point earlier. It's going to take about $100,000 to $200,000 to create a new unit. Our estimates say to do the kind of rehab necessary, it's about $75,000. but mm-hmm. you can do some initial pieces for about $10,000 to $15,000 with the Fortified Roof Program that actually lets you lower utility costs and lets the landlord lower rent by lowering their operating costs. We've got right. developers who can't move forward right now, who have funding gaps caused by long-term insurance gaps that are going to make it impossible for them to operate the property beyond a few years. So we've got to address the insurance crisis. And thankfully, that's not as big a ticket item as new construction. So we can start small. And that's where the city can invest. The city can say, let's take the low-hanging fruit. Let's take the homes and apartments that are occupiable, but the rents are out of reach because of insurance. Let's make these investments, long-term investments, not just helping the tenant pay their rent, helping the tenant and the landlord really be in relationship with each other and long-term, right? Long-term. This is one of the things that the trust fund will do. And while we're big believers in the rental assistance program,
let's back up a second. And I'm not trying to poo-poo on this, please, because yeah. But the reality is the trust fund is a sum of money. You know, the execution is something entirely different. I mean, you have, right. you know, and you have a Hano that's kind of down and out in Beverly Hills, right? And yes. and we're not spending a lot of our own taxpayer dollars here locally. There, it's predominantly federal dollars. And, you know, as important as affordable housing is, can't get that right. As with a number of housing authorities, I sit on one. It's a challenge. Right. They have these bastardized governance models, and you know, and HUD it tends to be all over the map, and you know, it moves at a snail's pace, and we can't get anywhere.
That's another.
And the only reason I bring this up is that you know the trust fund is a sum of money. I mean, how we manage that. And the governance that's going to go over that, and you know, who decides what project is worthy or not? How much are we going to put in this bucket versus that bucket? You know, I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road, but it's also where we have historically blown it every time.
Exactly. That's why this is also really transformative and a really great opportunity, because this governance model doesn't look like anything we've ever tried before.
Well, who's going to be responsible? Who's going to be responsible for this, for these dollars?
So the housing authority, first of all, is not going to be anywhere near this. So they're not involved. We can talk about the housing authority and the need to address their issues. The finance authority and the redevelopment authority will be directed by the city council on how to deploy these dollars every year in a public process that's going to take place during the budget season. So this time next year, the city council will be hearing from the advisory committee and the program administrators their suggestions in public about what they think the money could go towards. And then the city council members will approve it as a part of the budgeting process in full view of all community. That will also give people the chance to make their own voices heard and to understand what the priorities are. They can ignore their advisory committee and decide there's something more pressing that they think is more important, or they can go along with the advisory committee, or they can do something else because a group of citizens gets together and says, we think the money should be spent this way. This is what's different about this, and they're going to have to explain themselves every year.
In 5 years after spending $100 million, if this generates $20 million a year, and after 5 years spending $100 million, where do you feel that we're going to be on this report card relative to that 55,000 units that are needed?
So inside of that piece, we actually think we can get at least 5,000 units, particularly if we do the Fortify program. So that's number one. And given the fact that this $17 million is only about it, this money could only create a small percentage of what we think is necessary to address the 55,000, that's pretty good. 5,000 out of 55,000 is not bad, considering the fact that that $17 million, that $100 million is a drop in the bucket, as you said earlier. New Orleans
but are we, actually. But are we certain? And I look at the math, I look at the data, that number has grown from 33,600 in 2015, right? In 2024 to 55,000. What do we think this number is going to grow over the next 5 years?
If we don't do anything, it's going to continue to grow. Yes. If we don't do anything, but this is where.
Well, let's just say net of the 5,000 units that you say. I mean,
yes.
At this rate, this number could be 65,000, and we've only taken five off. So we still haven't been. We're not net gaining anything.
There's also other policy interventions that can take place. One of the things that can also happen when you make these kinds of investments is the insurance crisis is something that's cumulative. You can impact people as individuals, but you also start tipping the market, right? You start making these resources available at scale, and that allows other people to benefit from them and bring their costs down. There's going to be other money coming into New Orleans if we don't mess it up, to do things like add more energy efficiency. Those will also bring the numbers down. There's other programs that will complement it.
The backdrop and a difficulty for me as a former CFO, when I look at this as a dedicated fund and taking 2%, let's just say 17 or 20 million, let's just take it round about 20 million, in a city that is woefully underfunded in dealing with infrastructure, which should be the top priority to get straight, because that will do more to the quality of living here in the city than anything else. Most people have been trying to undedicate money. To go back down this path of dedicating money like this is a little exotic at this point in time. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because everybody's looked for more latitude. I mean, this council themselves have desired more latitude in the dollars that and appropriating the dollars to the legislative priorities that they have. So it's kind of a unique approach.
Yeah. But when you think about the dollars that are restricted, a lot of the dollars are restricted for things like the consent decree. And I think everybody would argue that the progress that the NOPD has made has been phenomenal. It's also saved us money. I was just talking about this with the folks at GNO Inc. the other day. The fact is that we have not experienced what other cities have experienced when it comes to the loss of life of our citizens, because our police officers are not only getting better at doing their jobs of protecting and serving, but also making sure that things that happen, like we've had some really outrageous incidences in our past that we've been able to get beyond. That's why we ended up in the consent decree. It wasn't prophylactic. We had some really bad things happening, as high profile as what happened on the Danziger Bridge, and things to work through to get out to stop that from happening again. That also, not only does it cost us loss of life, it also costs you money. And New Orleans has not had to pay those settlements. And so when the consent decree eventually ends, that will also free up additional money for those kind of other places where there's latitude. So there's going to be other dollars that are going to be less restricted that we're not going to divert away from.
Yeah, but we can make that argument all we want. We have underfunded pension funds. We have all kinds of challenges, legacy costs that we haven't come to grips with, judgments that we haven't come to grips with, infrastructure that we've not come to grips with. And, you know, that from a financial perspective, anybody that looks at this, you know, that has ever sat in that chair before will say, fundamentally, they're going to have an issue with it, because it really ties their hands. And, you know, mandates
dedication,
and dedications are a little different.
Money.
Yeah,
that's
I get
right,
it.
This
I
is
got
the only
it.
Dedication that, wait, but it also generates revenue, Newell. It generates revenue, bringing homes and apartments that are currently underutilized, that are not generating revenue.
Oh, I don't disagree. You know where I stand on this issue.
As we can get.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I get it.
Yeah.
When I do the math, though, we need a shock and awe, you know, approach. And I'm not so sure this is the shock and awe. Maybe a piece of it, but there needs to be a whole lot more that goes with it. Got to get to a break. Andronika Morris, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk about this again. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. Remember, the FBI reported that crime data in 2022, that violent crime fell by 2.1%. Well, not unlike the job numbers, they have revised those numbers. They put out a press release the other day, not a whole lot of hoopla. They kind of quietly revealed it. So now the numbers reveal an increase in violent crime in 2022 by 4.5%. The data includes thousands more murders, rapes, robberies, and aggravated assaults. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about a number of topics, and we'll also visit with Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park. Trunk or treat at Lafreniere Park this Saturday. So stay tuned. We will be right back after the top of the hour news break. This is Newell on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.